Welcome to another Newton and Co. podcast for Eye for the Light. I'm here with David, my co-host. David, how are you?
I'm very well, Chris. Great to be back. Good to be speaking to you again. Today, for your listening pleasure, we have an incredibly interesting person to talk to. I think I say that every time because everyone's incredibly interesting. But particularly today, we have a female photographer who is very well known across the photography industry in the UK as a champion of women in photography, a journalist, a technical camera reviewer, which makes her uncommon being a female in that realm, and also a prolific photographer. So welcome, Angie Nicholson. Oh, and I missed out a judge for Travel Photographer of the Year, which we are definitely going to be talking about. Welcome, Angela Nicholson. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for inviting me and thanks for that lovely introduction.
I didn't forget anything, did I?
No, I think that's enough. Thank you.
We'll find out. We'll find out.
Yes, but he's moving on.
Being polite.
Yes.
So, yes, thank you for joining us. We're going to start at the top, very basically. What is it that drew you into photography to begin with, which I know is the broadest possible question, but we're going to get you rolling something easy.
It's also a question that I ask a lot of other people, and then I have to suddenly think, well, what was it that got me into it? I was always interested in art, I suppose, but I was never a particularly good drawer, and I've not got the best patience either. So photography kind of got around that. And when I was younger, I always thought it was a very expensive hobby, and I occasionally borrowed my dad's camera. And then one Christmas, my granny gave me some money, and my dad had just bought himself an SLR at that point. And I thought, oh, I could probably buy myself a camera. And I looked at the cost of his, and I thought, well, I won't buy that one. I'll buy a slightly more affordable one. So I bought a camera and I just started shooting everything, everywhere, all the time. And then I did some City and Guilds courses as evening classes, and I really enjoyed those. And gradually, you know, I just got more and more absorbed with photography and the whole thing about, you know, how things appear when light hits them, how they change the mood, the atmosphere, and the sort of the meaning you can get in your pictures. And a friend of mine started talking about doing a degree part-time. By this time, I'd already been to university and, you know, was working and everything, but not in photography. And a friend of mine started talking about doing a degree part-time. And I thought, that sounds quite good. So I did it. I was very lucky because the job, I was actually doing two jobs for an organization, the Environment Agency at the time, sort of 50% of time spent on one, 50 on the other. And I was able to drop one of those jobs so I could actually focus on doing a part-time degree. So I was very lucky.
There's a revelation I didn't know, given that I've known you for quite a long time. You work for the Environment Agency. Crikey.
Yes.
There needs to be a whole other podcast on that. Okay. So, you know, that's your starting, your artistic background and a father that was interested in photography. I'm looking to the future and wondering if this is going to be a conversation with my daughter at some point.
I hope so.
You are still a photographer, clearly, but you're also a journalist and a photographic equipment reviewer, which I think, as I said in the introduction, is uncommon for us to find a female in that space. How did that come about?
Yeah, well, someone I worked with, actually, when I was at the Environment Agency, a manager I was working on a particular project said that I was really good at distilling information and making it concise and easy to understand. And that kind of stuck with me for a long time. And after I graduated, I was working part-time as a photographer, photographing events and things. And I'd always had an inkling to review cameras and write about photography. And I was really lucky to see a job advertised at Amateur Photographer magazine. So I applied and I got the job of technical writer at Amateur Photographer magazine. And I discovered that writing for a magazine is quite different to writing things for the Environment Agency. But I was very lucky because they were very patient with me. And gradually we got there. And I was able to, you know, progress. And I actually eventually became the technical editor at Amateur Photographer magazine. And I really, really enjoyed it. And that enabled me to meet lots of people within the industry and kind of spread my wings. But I still actually do some writing for Amateur Photographer.
Do you think that being a female in that technical review world, you add a different perspective to it?
I hope so. I think so, yes, because often physical attributes, you know, women have got generally smaller hands than men. So that's, you know, there's something there, a commentary there. Bags don't necessarily work as well or maybe work better, depending on how they're designed. Tripods, you know, all sorts of things. So it can be, there are some, obviously a lot more common ground, but there are a few things where there's a bit of differences. When I was meeting executives through the photographic industry, you know, when they come over from Japan to talk about a brand new camera or something, it was interesting because they tended to remember me, which was nice, you know, but because I was the one that wasn't a bloke. So, you know, I often found that they would come and chat to me So in some ways, there were quite a few benefits, but it was very interesting. I found all of the photographic journalists in the industry are very, very supportive and they're very friendly. It's a very friendly business. But it was sometimes quite strange and a bit worrying to see so few women handling the cameras. And it was at one particular press event where I looked around the room and I thought, there's a heck of a lot of people here, you know, maybe like 200 journalists, but only two women. And I thought, this camera is not going to be seen in women's hands. It's only going to be seen in the magazines, in men's hands and on websites and things. And that really set me thinking about something needed to be done.
Potentially that other woman might have been my former boss at EOS magazine, Angela August. Possibly the only other woman
it
around.
It wasn't. I can tell you it wasn't.
It wasn't. Oh, there was another one. There was
no. Well, there were quite a lot of journalists from across Europe. So this other woman was French and she might have been an influencer in another area. She either didn't know a huge amount about photography or she was being very, very patient with the man explaining photography to her. I couldn't tell because my French wasn't good enough.
Okay, come back a little bit to your photography. You said you did events. You still do events or does the reviewing now require you to have moved into other areas?
I really moved into other areas. I mean, when I get a camera in, there's a lot of generalist cameras around now. So I will photograph things that you could expect that camera to photograph. But say if, as we move towards an Olympic year and perhaps there might be some more top end cameras coming along, then I would probably want to take them along to sports events and start photographing, you know, lots of action and movement. I'm very lucky to have a fast moving dog. So I photograph him quite a lot. So no, I wouldn't say I do events anymore. It's more kind of things that I photograph out and about. And I go on a lot of meetups with SheClicks, which is the female photographers community that I run. And, we go to wildlife parks and we go to gardens and all sorts of places. So I tend to photograph things at those meetups.
It seems like an appropriate juncture to bring up SheClicks because you're known for that and obviously for Camera Jabber. Tell us about SheClicks. Where did the idea come from? What are the goals? What do you do with it?
My partner had said to me for a long time that I should create a website or something for female photographers. He kept saying, I can't understand why you haven't done that. And I was thinking, well, actually, you know, setting up a website is quite a complex thing. It's one thing setting it up, it's then running it and getting people to come to it. Because I think a lot of people think you just publish a website and suddenly traffic appears. It doesn't quite work like that. And I'd been speaking to a guy in the States and he kept saying that communities were very popular in America. And it was about the time that Facebook groups started to sort of become a thing. And I had a conversation with the photography show team and they told me that, I forget what the figure was, but it was about a third of their following on Facebook was women. But at that time, if you went to the show, there was no way a third of the people there were women. So I thought, well, there's obviously something about the way, you know, the way women communicate or want to connect that makes Facebook groups a good choice. So I decided to launch a Facebook group. It took me a little while. I had a couple of friends helping me while we sort of just brainstormed names and we came up with SheClicks. So I was going to launch it in September 2018, but I actually broke my foot about a month earlier and I was sat at home realizing I couldn't go out and I couldn't do anything. So I just, oh, what the heck? I'll press publish now. So it went live in August 2018. And because of all the contacts I've got in the industry, I thought, well, we'll probably get 300 members in about 8 weeks or something like that. And we actually did that in 24 hours. And that was when I really thought, oh, right, okay, so there is a need for this or a desire for this this kind of community. And I thought I had planned that we'd start running webinars when we got to 1,000 members. And that would probably be in my head. I thought that would be sometime in 2019. But we actually did that within about a month of launching the community. So I had to start getting organized and running webinars and things. And the idea is basically it's a space, you know, a community of women who are interested in photography at all sorts of levels. And they can come along and chat about, well, they ask questions, they can ask for thoughts on their photographs, celebrate their successes, ask why something's not worked. And it's just a supportive network with a kind of educational vibe.
Given that you are championing women in photography in this way, how do you see the differences between men and women and how they shoot or what they shoot or how they approach shooting?
Obviously, we're talking in very broad generalizations.
Hugely broad.
Massive generalizations. But I often go back to, I taught at an adult education center for a while. I taught photography and genuinely had a conversation with a woman where she'd been out for a picnic and she'd taken a photograph. She was telling me what a lovely day they'd had and how the children had been doing this, that, and it was so beautiful. And then the light was hitting, I think it was some grass stalks or something, and she really liked the light. So she took this photograph and then she had a fiddle with her camera and then she took this other one and she really liked it, but she didn't know what the difference was or, you know, why they looked different. So we had a conversation about aperture and depth of field. And then I don't know if it was the same week, you know, but I had another conversation with a guy who showed me a picture of some shopping trolleys. And he was explaining, you know, sort of what settings he'd used and the camera and the lens and all this. And he'd bought a new lens. So he was explaining he used that. And I said, so, but why did you photograph these shopping trolleys? And he said, well, it's because you said we had to photograph leading lines. And what was interesting was that one was a very technical approach to a photograph with the guy. And the second was a much more emotional response to the surroundings. And I think that is sort of two extremes of how we tend, I say, you know, big caveat of generalization, we tend to start out in our photography. And I think as women get more informed about photography, obviously they can become more technical and they, you know, they understand their camera controls and they take, you know, change the settings that they want. And the men, they often start out with more technical knowledge, but they, you know, they have to learn the more emotional side and the creative side, I think.
Maybe we should have all photography tutors being women to teach men how to be more sensitive.
Well, maybe. I mean, I to be fair, you know, I do know, we're talking generalizations, and I do know some very creative male photographers. Now, they might have started out as very technical photographers at the start. I don't know. They might have always been creative photographers. But I think that is, you know, how it started. And I think if you look at how landscape photography has changed over the last, I was going to say few years, but more like decades, it used to be very much kind of like, look at this spectacular view, a bit like a, you know, a classic painting that somebody might have of kind of, this is my land. Look at this fantastic land that I own. Whereas now we seem to be much more interested in, you know, the weather conditions and details within the scene and also, you know, the emotion of the scene. So I think we have all shifted. And I think, you know, men and women have done that.
I think it's quite interesting, this difference in approaches between men and women. And as you say, it's a generalization. I've just been talking to an Italian nature photographer, and she's been telling me about how difficult it is for her when she goes out photographing with a group of men. Because if you ask them about a picture, they start telling you all about the technical settings and how they're going to shoot it.
Yeah.
And I said, well, how do you do it? And she said, well, I look at a landscape or a mountain, whatever it might be, and I feel it. And then I try to translate that feeling into an image. Yeah. Do you think that's common amongst women?
Yeah, I think that's more common. You know, I'm sure there's lots of guys who can do that as well. But I think there is an element of men sort of picking up their cameras and going out to capture a specific thing, whereas women perhaps go out into the environment and see something that they then want to capture. So sort of being inspired by the landscape. I kind of feel that my inbox might be filling up with emails sort of saying, no, that's terribly wrong. You know, just how we start out or how we evolve. There's a lot more influences in photography, you know, available now in photography. You can look at Instagram and you can see a much wider range of photography. So I think some of those generalizations are being broken down because everybody's exposed to, you know, you've got more learning opportunities. So you can find out the technicalities, but you also got more exposure to interesting photography. And I think actually that has really been great for female photography because suddenly people look at a picture on Instagram or Facebook and just respond to it. That's a great picture. I love that. They don't come back with, oh, well, I see you used, you know, F16 and that's definitely too narrow. You should have done F5.6 and blah, blah. And I think that little bit there is burnt out. You don't get that as much. I mean, I'm sure if you look in the wrong places, you can, but it's easier to be inspired, I think.
I've often thought that the best photographers are people that, irrespective of male or female, they have that balance mm-hmm. between technical and aesthetic. And I've wondered whether it's easier to be technical and learn aesthetics or be aesthetic and learn technical. And I'm actually now thinking that women might have an easier job of it if they're coming at it from the aesthetic side, going, well, let's learn the cameras, because that's just buttons and dials that seems like complex mystery but isn't. But
yeah.
Learning to see is probably much more challenging.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, obviously, you can't take the photos you want if you don't understand the technicalities. But if you are inspired to do that, you know, you want to create, you've got a vision in your head that you want to create, then you're working towards something rather than attempting to sort of reproduce exactly what you see before your eyes. It's what you see in your head, really, that's important.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's about soul in photography rather than, you know, there are certain things in life that you can learn from a book or a magazine or a website, and there are certain things you can't. And yeah. If you can get some empathy and emotion into your pictures, then you're halfway to getting the wow factor.
Fundamentally, cameras, photography, technical level is not rocket science. It's quite simple. It's quite structured. Most people can get their head around it, but as I said, the other side of it, I guess, the artistic side is the harder bit to come by, but maybe not for women.
Yeah. There's always things like, you know, you pick up a camera and yes, you're talking about sensitivity, aperture, shutter speed, and let's chuck in white balance. But there's a squillion other buttons and things in the menu, isn't there, to confuse you. So, you know, all of that adds complication and can be intimidating, but actually is there designed to help you get the result you want. But it can be quite scary.
And most of them you'll never use.
Yeah. Yes. It's distraction at the end of the day. People have made beautiful pictures with the most basic cameras, which leads us into your testing of equipment and camera jabber and reviewing of equipment. And how do you said you go out and shoot what might be appropriate for that camera, but what is it you're looking for? How do you tally that up to the audience that you've got reading what you're producing?
There's a certain things that you have to address, such as, does the camera firstly do all the things it says it does? And then you're looking at things like, you know, as you'd expect, sort of noise control, and is the exposure meter reliable and that kind of thing. So I do tend to shoot in a series of, no, I wouldn't say I use identical situations, but, you know, in a series of commonly encountered situations. So, you know, landscapes and, you know, perhaps shooting into towards the light and this, that thing, sort of thing, to see how the camera responds. But these days, you know, most, just trying to think, yeah, I'm sure there was an SLR launched in 23, but most camera launches these days are mirrorless cameras. And you look in the viewfinder, actually, you can rely on the view that you see in there rather than looking at a dial going up and down. But it's still interesting to see whether you know, if you turn it towards the sun, does the image immediately get very dark? And things like subject detection help with exposure control as well as focusing. So I see my job really as trying to put people in touch with the camera that's right for them. Because I don't think there are any really bad cameras now. There are just cameras that are more suited to individuals. So, for example, you know, if you particularly like traditional controls, then it's obvious to look at Fujifilm because, you know, you can have an aperture ring on the lens, you can have a shutter speed dial, you can have an ISO dial. So you can see all those controls and you can change them. But if you would rather just see it all in the viewfinder and control it with dials as you're looking in the viewfinder or use buttons, then there are other options available. You know, do you want to have a vari-angle screen or you just want a flip screen or do you want a fixed screen? It's about trying to get people to understand what they can do with a particular camera and what it is well suited for. So, you know, is it a good camera for travel? Is it one that you would use for sport photography, wildlife or landscapes?
Has it actually got harder to review cameras because they're all so good now and you're starting to look at smaller and smaller differences between them?
Yes.
And at what level does that become an issue? I've said to people years ago, if you're asking me which camera to buy between a Canon, a Sony, a Nikon, a Fuji, which one you buy is irrelevant because you don't yet know enough to know the differences between them as to which one you should buy. So buy the one you like holding, that has buttons in a nice, comfortable place, and everything else will fall where it will.
And that's I think that's a pretty good summary.
With the follow-up to that, though, and the $64,000 question, which seems to update with thousands, million-dollar question, is if you had to pick one camera now on the market, and you can be brand-biased or not, if you had to pick, for you, someone that's seen so many cameras, what do you pick up if you could only have one more camera?
That is such a tough question, because I always, you know, I look at a camera, I think, oh, that's brilliant for X, and this is great for Y, and I love this, and I love that. So they all excel in different ways. But I think there are two cameras that have really, really impressed me in the last, I'm going to say a few months, because I can't think back how far it was. Nikon Z8, I think, is a brilliant camera. I mean, the Z9 is fantastic, but it's quite big because of its double grip. I've never really been that into double grip cameras. I guess I didn't start with them. And I understand that, you know, that is helpful if you use long lenses a lot, but I don't do that much. So the Z8 is a better sort of size for me, and its speed and subject detection is very, very good. And of course, the image quality is really nice. And I really like the handling of Z series cameras and the fact, I don't know if you've ever used it, it's called SnapBridge, which is a really easy way of connecting your phone and camera. So I can be at a SheClix event. If I'm using a Nikon Z series camera, it will ping 2 million pixel images to my phone automatically. So I can be at this event, you know, sit down for a cup of coffee and post some pictures on Facebook or wherever I want that have been taken with the camera rather than on my phone. And yes, other manufacturers do that, or you can connect your phone to it and send them across. But the Nikon cameras just seem very good at doing that automatically in the background. So, you know, you spend the morning shooting, and when you stop at lunch, your pictures are on your phone, which is really nice. And then I mentioned Fujifilm before. I think, you know, the X-T5 is a brilliant camera. They are really championing APS-C format cameras for photographers, because a lot of people are serious photographers who want a smaller format. And, you know, they are excellent cameras, and I do like those traditional controls. But relatively recently, I was shooting with the GFX 100 Mark II. And it's a world apart from other medium format cameras. It performs like a much smaller format camera. Suddenly you've got subject detection and speed of focus. Whereas, you know, I used to use back in the day a Mamiya RB67 Pro SD to give it its full name. And it was big and it was heavy. And yes, it produced great results, but God, it was slow. And this, I went out, they launched it in Sweden, in Stockholm. So I was in Stockholm and I thought, it was a dull, rainy day, but there was lots of people going by on bikes. And I thought, I wonder if I could get a panning shot with this medium format camera. And the answer was, yes, I could, because all I had to do was set up the appropriate shutter speed and, you know, make sure the exposure was going to be right. And then the subject detection would latch on to the cyclist. So as long as I panned at the right speed, which is a skill in itself, but as long as I panned at the right speed, the camera stayed in sharp focus. And I was just really impressed with that it's hard enough to do with a small camera, but with a medium format camera, it's a revelation. It's a different sort of performance. And, you know, I don't know that there's many people shooting from the touchline using one just yet. Perhaps there's not quite the right lenses available yet, but who knows where we'll go.
I want to pick up on something you said that you consider when you're reviewing equipment. Mm-hmm. Whether it's suitable for nature or landscape or travel, etc. One of the issues I've noticed with camera manufacturers is they still seem to be very much viewing a travel camera as one that's more like a compact camera that people take on family holidays. Whereas us as travel photographers, we have a very different view on that. When you're recommending, which way do you go?
I would say most of the audience that I write for, when they're talking about travel, they are interested in something a bit smaller, but they are generally enthusiast or, you know, serious enthusiast photographers. So they're certainly generally not looking for a compact. They want plenty of control. So I would say I probably err towards saying, you know, you want it something that's small and convenient, but plenty of control. I think I probably just sat on the fence there.
So, basically, it's still a camera that allows you to take all the other types of shots, like landscapes and et cetera, but it's not just a point and shoot. It's one that where you have the proper controls. And
yeah, goes beyond that, I'd say.
Since Chris has brought up travel photography, we're going to bring up another string to your bow, that mm-hmm. being that you are a judge this year on Travel Photographer of the Year, and you have judged some other competitions in the past. And I think I'd love to know how you approach that, what you look for. Essentially, I think people would love to know how to catch the eye of a judge.
Yes.
So what is it that you look for? What really gets hold of you and keeps hold of your attention, makes you pick an image from the no doubt many thousands? Chris could tell us however many thousands of entries there were.
Yeah.
What stands out to you?
Well, it's such a subjective thing, isn't it, photography? I think that a key to me is always light, because that can really make or break an image. You know, how it sits on the main subject. Does it bring it out? Does it make it recede? Something that I haven't seen before as well, you know, a different take. I have judged competitions before where you see a lot of the same thing, and it might be a great image. But say, for example, you know, if it was street photography and it's a photograph of somebody photographed behind walking along with an umbrella. Perfectly nice photograph, but it's not the first time that I've seen that shot. So it's going to have to be something pretty spectacular to make me select that as the winning image. And it might be that there is, you know, a break in the rain and a fantastic shaft of light, or, you know, a spray of a rickshaw or something going by making a difference. It has to be something that elevates it. If it's just another image like in the same style, then it's not going to win anything. So it has to be something that is, it stands out from the point of view, either from the point of view of subject or the way that subject has been approached.
Does that start to give you an insight, David?
It does. I mean, it's always interesting to hear from judges. I mean, it's interesting to hear from any photographer that looks at a lot of pictures, because, as you said, it's very subjective. But fundamentally, when you're talking to someone who sees thousands and thousands of pictures, there will be themes that start to come through, things that they start to look for. And that's, I think, what I'm trying to get to,
yeah.
to see what it is that grabs you.
Yeah, I think that's really important, actually, David, because I mean, certainly I see thousands and thousands of pictures every year, and I'm sure Angie does as well. And with the rise of social media, it's even more prevalent. And I see so many derivative images, so many pictures that someone's done before and they've simply copied. And we find with the awards that we'll get a winner, and then the next year, there's other people photographing the same thing or photographing something similar in the same way. They aren't going to win. It's that simple.
Yes. I think it's an unfortunate consequence, because on the one hand, it's brilliant that an image has won a competition and has inspired people to take pictures. And, you know, and they've taken the most amazing picture that they're really pleased with. And it could be the very best picture they've ever taken. But like you say, it can't win because it's the same as the previous year. But it does mean that the competitions are serving their purpose in inspiring people.
Absolutely. And it's also getting people to try different things. Mm. It's just a case of where they then place those pictures, because if they put them in a competition that's just rewarded those type of images, then they're unlikely to come to the fore again against people who are doing something different.
Yeah.
So how did you find the judging process? I'm not specifically talking about Travel Photographer of the Year, but the whole process of working with a panel of judges and coming to a decision between all of you.
I really like it. I mean, I think I'm quite instinctive as a photographer. So I kind of look through pictures and I instantly say, yep, I like that. I like that one. I like that one. And it is nice to be with a group of people who will make you stop and look at something else and sort of think, yeah, okay, you know, I can see the benefits of that image as well, or I can see why you don't like the image that I think is great. But, so it brings home the subjectivity of it. And it's, you know, it's always good to have a conversation and sort of, I think it helps bring out the context of an image as well, because, you know, they may recognise the situation in which that image has been captured, and you can have a conversation with it and sort of realise its deeper significance, possibly.
And sometimes how hard it is to take.
Yes, that's it. But I always have an issue with sometimes a photographer will show you an image and they will explain how hard it was to get it and, you know, the significance of it. And you think, okay. I still wouldn't put it on the wall, though, you know, and then they will show you another picture that they happened to take as they stood up and turned around and saw, oh, the light's nice, and just took a shot. That, you know, they stood up, turned around, took a shot, and they don't see any effort went into that. But in terms of, you know, somehow the composition was right, the light was great, it's an interesting subject, it looks better on the wall, you know, it just makes a better print. So sometimes you just have to kind of let go of the sacrifice that you had to make a picture if it isn't as good as the one that you took in a, you know, a fleeting moment.
But that's exactly what it brings you back to, moments. And sometimes it doesn't even matter if that moment is technically perfect, or sometimes even in focus, if it's capturing something else that makes you identify with it.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I was very lucky one time. I went to a restaurant quite a few years ago now, and they had lots of black and white prints up on the wall, huge prints of rock stars. And I remember looking at the pictures, and it was just as we were, you know, digital photography we had switched over pretty much to digital photography. And I was looking and thinking, wow, they missed the focus there, you know. And actually, we've got a lot fussier about images. I mean, if you think about the pictures from the war, you know, where there you can see sprocket holes because the film wasn't loaded properly, and you know, it's all fuzzy, and I think there's a bit of double exposure going on, but they capture the chaos of the event. And sometimes you do need to just kind of like go with the moment.
I wonder whether that in itself is probably the best advice for people looking to enter competitions, is it's not always about the picture that you are emotionally connected to as the photographer, as much as the pictures that make viewers emotionally connect to them.
I think it depends on what your emotional connection is. If it was the difficulty of capturing it, then yes, you need to disconnect it. But if it's the process, or, you know, the thoughts or the emotions that you experience as a result of seeing that view, then I think that is very important.
It's interesting with competitions. We get nearly 50-50 entry between men and women. But I see a lot less women seem to have the confidence to enter competitions. I wonder if it's to do with competitiveness. How do you see it as someone who works with a lot of female photographers?
I think it is a confidence issue. One of the most disappointing comments is, oh, well, my photography isn't good enough. And you think, no, it is. It really is. You know, it's so hard to convince people. And, oh, I probably wouldn't win. So, well, you definitely won't win if you don't enter it. And I think there seems to be a concern that it is somehow going to, well, I don't know, that there's some sort of shame in not winning. And I always think, well, if nobody entered, if only one person entered, there'd be a winner, but it would mean nothing. If 10,000 people enter and one person wins, obviously the odds are against you, but it means something to win that. So it makes a really big difference. But yeah, I think the most fundamental thing is confidence, and also lack of confidence around some of, have I understood all the rules? Am I interpreting them correctly? Have I uploaded this properly? All of that aspects comes into play as well.
Yeah, having seen what doing well in competitions can do for a photographer, and having seen run Travel Photographer of the Year for 21 years now, and seeing people who enter year after year, and some of them just start their photographic journey by entering. They know they're not good enough to win. They just want to put their pictures up there and see how they do, and they get better each year. I mean, some of our winners have been entering for 10 years or more before they win, certainly the overall prize. And last year's winner with the stunning shots of the rhino and the keeper, he entered from the very first year in 2003, and he just won it last year.
Wow.
And he said, he looked at it and he said, some years I knew I wasn't going to win, but it was part of my development, part of my process to improve my photography and in a way challenge myself and see whether I was thinking in a different way or bringing different perspective to what I was photographing. So I'd encourage everyone, young, old, regardless, to have a go at competitions. Choose your competitions carefully, but have a go, because it is a growing process for you as well.
And it also is really nice to give your photography a sense of purpose as well, because if you're just continually taking pictures to maybe scroll through, you know, on and post the old one on Facebook, it's not the same as actually sitting down and looking through your pictures or going out and shooting something specific, then searching through all the options you've got, you know, just tweaking them, maybe taking the odd spot of dust off or something, and actually entering it a competition. Suddenly you've got a real sense of purpose. And it's a while since I entered competitions, because I tend to judge them more often these days. But when I did, actually, once you've uploaded them or sent them off, I mean, back in the day, I used to put, you know, you sent them in an envelope, and it gives you that little buzz because you've actually done it. You know, what's going to happen? Could you win?
Yeah, could. Yeah. And you touched on the shooting specifically for a competition. Many competitions will have different categories and different themes. One thing I've observed over the years, that very often the young photographers will shoot specifically for the competition. Mm-hmm. And the adult photographers will go into their archive and try and pull together a set. And it's remarkable how I think the young photography is really interesting. It's inspiring, because they're trying to do something specifically for that purpose, and it really helps them to grow.
Yes. And I think the other danger of going through archives is that you tend to start entering the same images, not each year, but, you know, two different competitions. So that image, if it does get through, if it gets shortlisted, it's likely to be shortlisted in several competitions, which is nice, but I don't think it has the same impact.
No, I agree with you. And especially if it's already been plastered all over social media beforehand.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
But we run a challenge every month in SheClick. So I set a theme. And then one of the questions is always, does it have to be shot this month? And say, well, no, it doesn't. But a lot of people, you know, originally I was asked to set a challenge because people wanted to do that. And some people do shoot that subject that month. And it's always really lovely to see the results. And then other people will go through their archives. And it might well be, actually, this month the theme is still life. So it might well be that there are people, in fact, I know there are SheClickers who've been shooting still lifes for a long time. So they are probably looking through their archives, searching for their very best images. And that's great. But there are other people who've never shot still life who are giving it a go. And, you know, it's a really nice balance.
I'm going to pick up on that, because you brought SheClicks back into it just as I was about to bring us back to SheClicks. You talked about confidence, maybe confidence among women in entering competitions and the like. And obviously SheClicks is helping to maybe instill a little more confidence in women. What's your ultimate goal with SheClicks? What's next? Where do you think that SheClicks is going to go? What do you want to achieve with it, if you haven't achieved it already?
Well, it's funny, because I'm not a great planner of moves. But say, for example, last February, I think it was, SheClicks won the Community of the Year in the Amateur Photographer Awards. And after we got that award, I was thinking, so what do we do now? It feels like a stepping stone. I should be doing something else. And I thought, well, we've got the webinars. We have an exhibition at the photography show. We have the challenges that feed into that exhibition. So what else should we do? And the answer came to me at that time was a podcast. So I started recording podcasts with women in the industry. So it's women in photography. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a photographer, but generally, so far it has been. My point there is to talk to successful women in the industry to find out sort of what drives them and how they got to where they are, so that women who are trying to, either as enthusiasts or professional photographers who are trying to sort of get to the next step, can find that actually all of these really successful female photographers they know about had the same processes, had the same thoughts and concerns, and perhaps sometimes they just thought, oh, what the heck, I'll go for it. So the podcast has been going 6 months, so I want to evolve that. I'm actually going to be recording with Amy Vitale later today. So it's been so exciting to be able to get access to these amazing female photographers and shine a light on them, but also, you know, suck them dry for information. So I intending to grow that. I would love it. We're big in the UK and our second biggest following is in the US. So it feels like that's an area where we could grow. We have an exhibition coming up at the photography show in March. And there are a couple more things in the pipeline, which I'm not going to make public just yet, but I'm not a huge one for planning steps. It feels, always feels a bit more organic, but there's probably, you know, there's something bubbling around in the background.
How many members does SheClicks have now?
It's about 12,500.
So you've grown it from zero to 12,500 in 5 years.
I mean, that's in the Facebook group. We also we've got a website, and I send emails to people about things that are happening, webinars and stuff, so there's a few people who get emails from me who aren't in the Facebook group. So it's probably a bit bigger than that, but yeah, 12,500.
I would say probably you're doing extremely well and don't overgrow too quickly.
Thank you. Yeah, it took me by surprise how quickly it grew. And, you know, one of the nicest things is when we go to meetups, and living in the southeast of England, tend to have more meetups there. And obviously we've got the biggest population just around London. But November last year, we went up to Merseyside and had a couple of meetups, one at Crosby Beach, another at Martin Mere, the wildfowl centre, basically. That's it. And that was really, really nice. I think on the Crosby Beach, we had about 40 SheClickers wandering around. And we were so lucky with the weather, because I've been there when it's been torrential, but we were really lucky with the weather. And you could just sense all these people smiling all around, having a great time taking photographs. But what was really nice is there's quite a few photographers who live close to each other who'd never met. And then the next thing is they have someone to meet up with. They can go out and take photographs with someone, you know, and particularly with nighttime photography, not everybody feels confident going out. So I'm really interested in forming more connections like that and helping people feel more comfortable, more confident and happier with their photography.
And have you ever had a male speaker or tutor involved? And if you had, do you think that would change the dynamic?
No, we haven't. And yes, I think it would. So one of the things that led me to start SheClicks was I went on I ran some photo walks for Wilkinson Cameras when they had their, what was it called? Digital Splash. They had a show. And generally there were 12 people in a walk, and generally there were 10 men and 2 women. And then there was one where it was the other way around. There were 10 women and 2 men. And I said to them, do you know each other? And they said, no. And so I was chatting to them about why they came on the walk and this and the other. And they were quite clear about the fact that they thought that they would be able to ask me questions. I wouldn't patronise them. And, you know, to be fair, I think there were plenty of guys there who wouldn't have done that either. But that was their perception. Also, there's quite a lot of evidence that women or girls, or women and girls, I should say, prefer to learn from women. So for that reason, I do restrict it to women. But also, the other thing is that SheClicks isn't just about nurturing people who are trying to learn. It's also about trying to promote the female photographers or the experts who have kind of got to their point and get them the recognition. So by having them as a guest speaker, then it's elevating them, or, you know, just reassuring everyone that this person knows what they're talking about.
It's reinforcing to your she clickers that women can succeed in photography and get to their elevated position.
Exactly that. Yes. Yeah. I wish I'd said that. Should we record it again and I'll say that?
Well, I think we're sort of coming to a nice rounding off point here. And
we
David
are. I'm
is
going
champing
to jump in
at the bit here because he always has to ask one question. And it's good for me because it gives me a chance to catch up on my sleep. Fire away, David.
Everybody loves the question, honestly. So
okay.
You're going to be the one person that doesn't now. If you could take all of the learnings that you've accumulated over the years in the industry through life and distill them to one piece of advice that you would give the younger you,
mm-hmm.
what would it be?
Oh, well, I think it would be just go for it, actually. Just keep doing it because, you know, if you can sit back and worry, and I think it's very easy to worry in the present, but when you get to a certain point, you look back and you think, well, that was interesting. And like I say, I don't necessarily plan things. It's kind of like my growth tends to be organic. So just to have that, to believe that that will actually happen.
That'll do.
Yeah.
Was that shorter?
No, that's a really interesting answer because we always try to balance out the number of podcasts that we do with male photographers or male travelers and female travelers. Mm-hmm. Almost all of the women who've done a podcast with us have said, go for it.
Yeah, it's a variation on the theme of it will work out, just do it.
Yeah, yeah. Have confidence.
Yeah.
I was actually, there's a podcast that went live today with Brooke Shaden, and she said, she clicks one. She said to me that she always believes that she will succeed. And I think that is a really important mentality because if you believe you'll succeed, when you come up to a blockage, a stumbling point, you will look for a way around it and assume it can be passed. But if you are of the opposite, and I didn't think this was going to work out anyway, you will stop. You know, this is the end point of that. It doesn't work. But if you have a bit of belief in yourself, then you will look for ways around it. And it might be actually you go off on a bit of a tangent, but you keep progressing.
Yeah, you're not giving yourself an excuse to just say, well, it wasn't for me, or it's because I'm a woman or whatever. Yeah.
Well, on that note, that quite emotional, sensitive, female-driven note... I'm going to wrap it up and say, Angie, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you and learning a bit more about you and your background and your views on photography. And it's been interesting and enlightening. And I think Chris is sounding slightly more sensitive in his tone as well.
So that was to be expected, David.
He's a sensitive type. Oh, thank you. It's been really lovely chatting with you. I've really enjoyed it.
Good. Thank you very much, Angie.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.